What a long, strange trip it's been, ladies and gentlemen. I never thought I would make so much effort and be so stoked to go to the Republican convention. But these are the times we live in, as some of the people organizing the protests in the Independent Media Center who are older put it. This only comes around once every 30 years or so, so you kind of got to be there. This has been building, especially in Europe, for years. The first outbreak, as we all know, that not even the straight media could keep a lid on and pretend didn't happen was in Seattle last fall, when people who had about zero interest in how high finance actually works suddenly showed up by the tens of thousands to vent their opinion about the World Trade Organization and the corporate agenda in general. We saw it on April 16th against the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund with white-collar genocide policies that put third world countries further and further and further and further and further into debt. People who had been demonstrating against the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund for years said usually they got a dozen to 200 people at the annual gatherings. This year they got, what, 20,000, 30,000? Obviously something is up. More and more people are beginning to notice that government at all levels is often bought and paid for, and they have nothing to say about the policies. For example, all of a sudden a guy with something of a progressive track record way back when becomes mayor of your town and suddenly decides that they should level Chinatown to build a $1.3 billion monument to one of the most incompetent teams in Major League Baseball. This is not a sign of good judgment on the part of Mayor Street, but I think there's more to it than that. Somebody's prodding him to do it the same way if you suddenly get in the White House and find out that maybe old Ross Perot was right for once. I mean, I thought the only value he had in running for president was proving that there really was a flying saucer crash in Roswell in 1947 and the alien still walks amongst us. But no, he moaned and groaned about budget deficits, and every country in human history has had them and still seems to thrive, often a lot better than ours does. But those debts are in bonds. You know, when you buy U.S. savings bonds, you're bailing out the government spending too much money on the military and the prisons, basically. But most of the people who own those bonds are bond traders on Wall Street, so they can say, well, you want social policies and reversing the income gap that we don't like? Well, guess what we'll do if you try that? We're going to call in all our bonds and you're going to be instantly bankrupt. That's how they can strangle people behind the scenes and make sure the social policies are to their liking. And I suspect with city fathers, especially in a town as famous for its corruption as Philadelphia is, that is no exception. But I've been through some stadium politics in San Francisco, too. Now, that was what got me back into voting, actually. I mean, I dutifully voted for Jimmy Carter when I was 18. Regardless of the halo around his head now, he was a conservative enough president that even my dad refused to vote for him in 1980 and voted for Barry Commoner instead. So that, and then having to choose between Dianne Feinstein and someone even worse for mayor of San Francisco, and Reagan and Mondale, what kind of choice was that? They were both actors, one played John Wayne, and the other played the whiny loser. And voters thought they were making their own choice the whole time, or that that was the only choice they could make. What got me back into registering to vote, aside from a little talking to from Frank Zappa, was what fun it was to vote down baseball stadiums. The Giants have always been pretty arrogant, and at the time, their owner, who demanded the public pay for the stadium, was keeping a building right in the middle of downtown vacant for tax write-off reasons. So I'm not going to give this guy a goddamn stadium. I'm going to show up and vote. And so then I got back into it. The Giants lost 4 stadium votes, I might add, all publicly funded. 2 in San Francisco. Okay, bye-bye, we're gonna move to San Jose, who then votes them down. Okay, we're gonna put it in Silicon Valley. They'll give us a stadium. No, they won't. So finally, our swashbuckling wheeler-dealer of a mayor, Willie Brown, managed to ram through a stadium that was privately funded, although the city spent a lot of gazillions of dollars on the infrastructure around the stadium, which they don't even count in when they tell you the budget of what the stadium is going to be. But the stadium, I believe, was in the $150 to $300 million range. I could be wrong. So then, quickly, true to the scam, a baseball-only stadium, well, what about the 49ers, man? Owned by Eddie DeBartolo, whose grandfather was allegedly the Al Capone figure for the Cleveland area. You know, he wasn't going to take any chances. He's based in Youngstown, Ohio. He knows how to get things done. Brought in his own operatives to make sure the election went his way. Because this wasn't just a 49ers stadium. And there would be a mega mall attached, which would require paving a state park by the ocean to do it. Owned by Eddie DeBartolo, who owns all those Mills malls. Any mall with Mills on the end is one of his. I think there's one or two around here, actually. He's made billion gazillions on malls and could easily put up the whole stadium himself. But it's an ego thing, man. So the public must submit and buy the 49ers a stadium or they'll move to L.A. as if L.A. would ever want to root for the 49ers. I mean, that had me laughing almost as hard as when the Seahawks were threatening to move to L.A. or the Denver Broncos were going to move to L.A. unless they got another stadium. Same scam in every town. I'm sure they'll threaten to move the Phillies to North Carolina soon if this doesn't work. Not that long a drive if you really want to see them that bad. See them lose that bad. So anyway, we have this stadium mega mall, and DeBartolo operatives come in and set things up so the people in the neighborhood around where they're going to put up the stadium, the ruins of Candlestick Park, got to vote 30 days in advance. And election judges all over town on the real election day were dressed in 49er merchandise. Blatant violations of the law, but of course the Secretary of State in California finds nothing wrong with these practices. But thankfully then Eddie DeBartolo got caught in a bribery scheme in Louisiana to try and grease the way through a former governor to get to build one of the showboat casinos. Which is weird too. People like Pete Rose are banned from sports forever for gambling. But here's a guy who owns casinos who got to run a football team. But not anymore. He hands it to his sister, trusts her to take care of it while he beats the charge. She then takes the team away from him in a lawsuit and lets her husband run it. So DeBartolo is gone and the stadium is just sitting there. No ground has been broken yet. Ha 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 ha. But giant football stadium attached mega mall was budgeted at about $440 million. The point I'm making is Street is saying $1.3 billion for the stadium for the Phillies. Where is that other $900 million going to be going? It's not going to the stadium. So make sure that this is something that gets voted on publicly and gets voted down, or this entire city is going to look like Kensington and Fishtown with a gleaming stadium and a round jail in the middle. Because there's no money for anything else. And I mean, Al Davis keeps moving the Raiders from town to town, back and forth. It's like, you better give me more luxury boxes. Fuck the real fans. We need more luxury boxes. Just like ancient Rome and the gladiator shows. The privileged rulers sit behind glass and no longer have to mix with the peasants. And then the guy who runs the Baffler magazine pointed out that time up in the Meadowlands when football fans started throwing snowballs at the San Diego Chargers and knocked a coach unconscious and stuff, why didn't they turn around and snowball the luxury boxes? Anyway, enough on stadiums. The point made, if you blow all your money on stadiums and prisons and a new Star Wars system or whatever that both Bush and Gore support, there's not going to be much money left for anything else. Of course, they'll keep the area around Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell nice and shiny. Just in time for the corporatists who cracked the Liberty Bell and crack it evermore to come to town for their convention. I came in both to, of course, check out the festivities, and this time I'd been invited in by the Independent Media Center, specifically Free Speech TV, to try my hand at being a TV reporter and an anti-pundit, I suppose. When you support things like Free Speech TV and Independent Media Center and Democracy Now! On radio and or TV, you get, instead of the Today Show, after Bush's speech, you got me as the color commentator analyzing the thing. You know, I read it the night before. I didn't get to see it because I was out doing something else, and then just got enough of a whiff of Bush on the screen that, boy, was I glad I didn't have to sit through any more of him. Americans generally seem to choose their presidents by which of the two options offered they can most stomach having to look at on TV for the next 4 to 8 years, and that's as far as it seems to go these days. One columnist said about his father way back when, how could so many women have voted for somebody who reminds women of their ex-husband? But this one, the same thing, only just he still comes across as like a spoiled frat boy trying out amongst his friends for the college debate team or something. America's gonna stand strong. And don't mess with Texas. China invades Taiwan, don't mess with Texas. Vice president would be Dick Cheney, who among other things, as Secretary of Defense under King George I, ordered Colin Powell to draw up plans to nuke Baghdad. His wife makes Tipper Gore look like somebody you would actually trust by comparison. She was head of the National Endowment for Humanities under part of Reagan and Bush's term for 7 years and denied grants to any education project that looked like it might be too political, especially ones that want to invite in any multiculturalism into the curriculum that didn't say America is great and weren't we wonderful for killing the Indians. In other words, war on the so-called politically correct to bring back and entrench the patriotically correct, according to people like Lynn Cheney and the religious right. This is where she comes from. So we've had one of the two shindigs, and then in LA we're going to have the other one, and even the networks are covering them less and less than they used to because they're so boring, and no matter how often you trot out Hank Williams Jr., who disgraced both his father and his son by appearing at such a slimy event. Who was that local band who played on there, the Interpreters or something like that? What does this say? Surely they tried to get the Stone Temple Pilots or Blink 182 or Korn or Fleetwood Mac or Jimmy fucking Buffett or something. None of them showed up to play for the Republicans. Not even B.B. King will fall for that anymore. So they have to get some local spoiled band to do it instead because none of the big folks will show up. I thought that was very, very interesting. So that means there's a reaction, especially when you recoil at the sight of King George II and just how red that neck really is. You know, we basically have a cross here between Dan Quayle and the Dukes of Hazzard, with the guy who wanted to nuke Baghdad telling him what to do behind the scenes. But is Gore any better? They're all saying, well, we better get behind Gore then and make sure that Bush doesn't get in. The Fear Bush signs that were being held up certainly do have a point, don't they? But how different is Prince Albert really from King George II? And the reason I bestow them those titles is they both come from old money, very wealthy families who've been monkeying with politics to screw the rest of us for generation after generation. I mean, the Gores date clear back to the Civil War. So their job isn't to try and fix things or lead us to a new tomorrow or come up with a new beginning, to borrow a line that King George II borrowed from Mr. Bill I in 92. Their job is to protect old money, period. Meanwhile, I know I've said this again and again, but now people are actually going out and doing it. Don't hate the media, become the media. And that's what Free Speech TV was about. And I gave a name to some of this where everybody shows up with their camcorders and catches the police doing things like Rodney King beating Thomas Jones. CNN says no rubber bullets in Seattle, and then it goes out on the net an hour later, footage of rubber bullets being fired, and CNN has to change their story. What I call that now is the camcorder truth jihad. Anyone can join. All you have to do is pick up your camera, catch somebody doing something that CNN won't admit that they've done, get it on the net or out through Free Speech TV networks or Independent Media Coalition, and voila, you're part of the truth jihad, helping expose a better tomorrow and helping reclaim the media as the fourth branch of government through basically guerrilla media. But if you really get cool with it and add some interesting angles and spice and some humor, it can be infotainment. And one of the things they had me do was go down to this PolitiFest that was down one of the halls, the little exhibit for people who couldn't get into the convention but wanted a good whiff of Americana and all. Anybody go to PolitiFest? Oh, man. I was calling everybody I knew as soon as I got, you've got to go, you've got to go. This is so twisted. Mutter Museum, nothing. Go to the PolitiFest if you want to see really warped stuff. You know, what the Don't Mess with Texas and Dick Cheney crowd thinks Americans should think their country looks like, basically. You could, like, have your picture taken waving on the steps of part of an Air Force One, which looked a lot like a crashed piece of wreckage because they only had part of it in there. And watch out for this in the future. Now that they can move stuff around in Photoshop on computers so you can have people who've never seen each other look like they're talking together and been caught live on camera, the first of these I saw was Abe Lincoln, Muammar Gaddafi, and Reagan having dinner together. And it looked totally real. And my message there is, think about that every time you see a photo in the straight media. Is it real or is it not? Even the Elian Gonzalez one of him crying melodramatically is the admittedly typical US Gestapo tactics to take the kid away from his loony relatives. I don't know if that photo's real. I don't even know if Elian Gonzalez is real, for that matter. I mean, it's such a heart-wrenching story. There's been enough baseball pitchers washing ashore. Let's try a little kid this time. And preoccupy the country with poor little Elian Gonzalez and evil Fidel for months on end so we don't have to talk about anything else. That's how corporate media works. And not a damn thing about homeless families with less money than Elian's dad is making in Cuba sitting out on the streets begging for change in cities like this one and the one I come from. That's not news. After all, a picture of that next to an important advertiser in the newspaper, and they might just cancel their ads. We can't have that. Oh, back to PolitiFest. I've only just begun in the voyage to PolitiFest. Luckily, Phil over here from DUTV and the Independent Media Coalition came with me. Along with John and Sam from the Kensington Welfare Rights Union, who are part of the IMC and some others. Yes, let's hear it for the Kensington Welfare Rights Union. Even that type of resistance is, in a way, becoming the media, because the corporate media is not going to admit that there's that many people hurting, or that when people get cut off of welfare, and more people are, and it was really coming down in 2001, what do? When you don't have a place to live anymore? Sell drugs? Yes, basically. The people at KWRU, the Welfare Rights Union, were telling me the largest sources of income in this part of town are welfare, and the close second is drugs. And it's going to grow when people get thrown off. And of course, maybe then there'll just be more prison cells for the people selling the dope. And, oh God, don't get me started on that, at least not for another half hour or so. Okay, back to PolitiFest. What else did they have there? Oh, you could be photographed signing a bill in the Oval Office, which thanks to the camcorder Truth Jihad, I got up there and got out that very first piece from my first spoken word album that Ice-T sampled later on the Freedom of Speech album, and the DOC did it later. We interrupt this program with a special bulletin. America is now under martial law. All constitutional rights have been suspended. Well, we interrupt this program with special bulletin. America's now under martial law. Don't mess with Texas. Stay in your homes. And back to Photoshop, you could get your picture taken and then they'd morph it on computer so it looked like you were hanging out with King George II and everybody was having a good old time. I didn't get one of those done. Partly my stomach began to boil. We got there pretty late and we had priorities. So the longest line was Anchorman for a Day, where you could be videotaped, complete with teleprompter, telling you what to say, standing in front of a backdrop of a political convention floor, pretending you're Sam Donaldson, who I got to accost on the street, by the way, with a camera as well. I got Donaldson, I got Arianna Huffington, God, who else? I'm spacing out that band who opened the interpreters, I got some of them too. If you got a chance to play in front of 40,000 people, you'd take it, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? Wouldn't you? We did it for exposure. Exposure. But anyway, Anchorman for a Day, and this was hilarious. Starting with the second volunteer I'd interviewed, who there's tons of volunteers working for the convention. I forgot to bring my volunteer handbook, too bad, because I was going to read you the regulations for volunteers driving golf carts, among other things. Both on golf courses and in parking lots, because of course Republicans don't walk to the convention. Somebody else takes them there in a sedan chair, excuse me, golf cart. I asked these people, okay, you're volunteering. Here it is, the city of Philadelphia, who doesn't have any money, found $7 million to put into this convention. The state put in $7 million. Corporate sponsors upped the ante to $40 million. Why are you doing this for free for these people who have $40 million bucks and are too cheap to pay you? And the guy, really young guy, might have even been a teenager, manning the line and handing out the teleprompter script at Anchor for a Day, said he was doing it to save the babies. And how godless Al Gore was, even though in this election the religious right wins either way, unless Ralph Nader gets in, because both Gore and Bush are born-again fundamentalist Christians. And they both have a well-connected society wife who's down with the religious right and all. Both of them do. You know, both of them have been wearing Jesus on their sleeve, too. I mean, what would Jesus do? God, what would Gore do? Another thing I learned from talking to them and other anti-abortion zealots is their new tactic is that they all seem to have the same memorized robotic Marilyn Manson death metal level graphic description of partial births abortions that they recite on cue as fast as they can like an auctioneer to get you too to want to drop everything you're doing to block clinics and somehow save babies that way. Even though this guy and the other ones I interviewed later, they didn't give a damn about them once they were born. It was only the unborn that interests these people. And then, as the line snaked around, there were the other people being anchor for a day. The little kids trying to read the news. I mean, that was pretty cool. That was touching. And then there was this one woman who was up there when we first got in line who was following the teleprompter script and making all these lewd gestures, even stroking her crotch at one point. And she was, I would say, a little too overly tanned and in her mid-50s. So we interviewed her afterwards. It turned out, you know, she was in the business, as they say. She is a professional dancer. And apparently one time, part of an escort service. And this is a story we were trying to get to the bottom of, is find some of these $2,000 a night escorts that they'd been flying in to service these lonely Republican wankers during the convention. The closest we got was phillyexotics.com, but we didn't get to interview any of the people who'd been brought in and all. But she would do, because earlier I'd interviewed Nina Hartley nude in a porno store talking about freedom of speech, and she thought Republicans were lousy lovers. She wanted Peter Jennings because he was such a honey bunny. But this woman said, oh no, Republicans are great in bed. Once you get them between the sheets, it's just a matter of how they make love and all. Okay, what was the strangest assignment you were ever hired for? Oh, that's easy. I was brought in by a pilot to do him in the cockpit of an airliner at 20,000 feet. I fly home tomorrow. This is a little worried about this. So then I got up there, and oh, does anybody ever change the script here? The worker's kind of bored by now after 2 days. Oh, no, not really. And so I got up there. The rapture is here! The rapture is here! People are flying off the street up into heaven, just like in one of those Jack T. Chick religious comics. But down here on the convention floor, the Republicans have been left behind. They're panicking. They're waving money at God, but he doesn't want them in heaven. I was trying to make it like the Hindenburg crash and stuff, and then I ran out of stuff to say, so I let it go and went on to, speaking of the rapture, past the morph your picture with King George II booth to the money changers. And what a motley crew of money changers in the temple we had here. Forget the exhibits of a history of presidential footwear that they had in there. You'd find more tasteful knickknacks at Graceland than they had in these booths. All kinds of George W. Bush knickknacks and red, white, and blue felt cowboy hats and stone-looking plaster bust of King George I that didn't even look like him for $135, coffee table books on George and Barbara Bush, coffee table books on their goddamn dog. Somebody else was hawking red, white, and blue flashing beads, made in China, of course. And then another book stall, this is where I really scored from the money changers, God, Guns, and Rock and Roll by Ted Nugent. No free-for-alls here. Ted has very specific plans for our youth. He has a little camp for kids where he teaches them how to shoot everything and stuff. And the first blurb on the back is from Charlton Heston, who has never been as entertaining in his entire career as he is now, I might add. People who want gun control are part of a new age conspiracy to turn the world into a godless Sodom? I don't think so. I mean, that would be more interesting than the corporate world order, I grant you. And then Kirk Gibson, a baseball legend, at the bottom, don't let the ponytail fool you. Read, learn, and join the cause. And what is the cause here? Let's get to the couple biblical quotes. The thin blue line, one ass to risk. He's good with those little one-liners. I will give him. Your life starts from point A and ends at point B. Kick maximum ass. We're talking deep here. Among the chapter headings are, want to go to a gun and knife show? I'll open my jacket. Tres venison hombres, handgun hunting in Africa. My son the pig killer, how proud can a dad get? That is a chapter title. Nuge's message to kids, page 289. Here we go. If God didn't want us to eat pork, why would he have put all that meat on pigs and deal with their stinking porcine behavior on Noah's Ark? God, he's even deeper than Charlton Heston. Oh, what else? Oh my God. I haven't even got back to Tipper's book yet. not a gangbanger, graffiti, vandal, dope geek, laughable, saggy pants rapper, or sour-faced punk to be found in the Nugent family. Nuge's message to kids. When I get kids together at my Ted Nugent camp for kids, I give them the full metal gospel, something like this. Greetings to my fine spirit of the wild, youthful blood brothers all. Do not think for one all-American working hard, playing hard, rocking hard, hunting hard, shooting hard, living strong minute that I don't think all of you young Americans every wild day of my adventurous life. Does that mean he thinks of kids every time he shoots another deer? He's straight edge, apparently. I celebrate each and every day of my joyous life with such intensity because I am 52 years clean and sober. So there you get the book on the Nuge. I can take no more.